not.
The Beatles.
Those circuses on the air.
The president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Connors have been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Good morning, Mr. Dave Schwann.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Dave Plyer.
What is happening, buddy?
Yeah, once again, a happy birthday to you.
God, that never ends. It never ends.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, you know, we had a little birthday celebration.
More than a little.
It was fun. Yeah, a little rooftop game. It was a blast. It was nice to see. You know, it's great. What I really enjoy about events and parties and stuff is when you can get everybody together from all walks of life, you know, from your family and your really close friends and neighbors and people you work with and clients and all that other good stuff.
And everybody has a good time.
I hope so. I think they did.
Oh,
I think
I'm
they
sure.
did. Yeah. I think they did. So what's happening, buddy? Next week you're gonna be in darkness.
I will be. Well, if you ask certain people, they'll say I've been in darkness for almost 61
oh,
years.
Nice.
But yes, let's see. Actually, a week from today, we will be on the road, headed to Southern Illinois. Next Sunday being a travel day, in order to cover the total eclipse. On Monday afternoon, about 1:20 Monday afternoon, Carbondale and very close proximity will be in darkness. Day will turn to night, and that's the first time that's happened somewhere in the United States since 1979, but the first time in nearly a century that we've had this type of thing occur.
You know, what's funny is, and I'll just mention that Rob Hart, who used to do radio here, and he's over at BBM now. He posted a Walter Cronkite interview of the last newscast where it was the last eclipse, and he said the next eclipse like this will be in 2017.
Yeah,
announcing it all the way back then,
1979.
Yeah,
that's true.
1979. Yeah,
that's true. And we really weren't affected by it too much here. This time, though. For, you know, everybody that's going to stay around here on Monday, you will notice something because about 80% of coverage will occur here. So it will get dark.
Skilling posted something this week about a mom, and this really does happen in school life with families and so forth, is you get somebody, you plan an event, and then somebody's got to complain about when it is or it's not scheduled right. And somebody planned something and said, well, there's going to be a school event. We're going to bring all the kids outside. You know, does it have to be on Monday? Can we do this another day? Can it be on Wednesday later in the week?
It's like they're thinking that this is some sort of a pre-planned party or something.
What is that all
well,
about?
Well, there's not much we can do about the moon lining up in front of the sun.
Now you just got to stand by and wait.
Take it up with the powers that be.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
Can't we do this on
So a bit of history next week that'll happen, so we'll definitely talk about that. Absolutely.
Right.
All right. 1872, Dave. The first mail order catalog issued by Montgomery Ward was 1872. Of course, it was a mail order business in Chicago. After several years working as a traveling salesman among rural customers, he observed that rural customers wanted city goods, but their only access to them was through rural retailers who had little competition and offered no guarantee of quality. He also believed that by eliminating his competition, he could cut costs and make a wide variety. You know, could you do me a favor? Could you get me a new pair of headphones? Okay, thanks. Sorry. My headphones keep cutting out.
Oh, they're cutting out?
Yeah, it's very hard to hear, like, now, like, need them now.
It's a job hazard.
Yes. After several false starts, including the destruction of his first inventory by the Great Chicago Fire, Ward started his business. And I worked for Montgomery Ward, actually, for about 5 years back in the 90s.
I thought you did.
An experience, and it was right before. Hold on a second, Dave. Talk amongst yourselves.
You all right down there?
Here we go. Hold on a second. Now I've got some headphones that are working. All right, thanks, Camille. So anyway, I worked for them. Yeah, in the buildings that are along the Chicago River, which was such a cool experience. I was head of visual merchandising, so we were kind of remodeling stores, really toward the end when you really couldn't do much to save the company. But when you think about this. The Montgomery Wards, which has been gone for such a long time, Dave.
How long has it been gone?
It was, I'd say at least 2001. 15.
Yeah, I was going to say 15 years or so.
Yeah, 2001. And then, you know, Sears is just not destined to last, probably. And I'm wondering if they're even going
to
make it through the holidays.
I hate to see this personally. I hate to see this.
It's going
to
go. I'm just telling you. I cannot believe if they've already got suppliers. I've heard shutting them off for the fourth quarter, but or for the holidays. So, you know, when you think about that, they are the leaders in mail order. And that's what is taking over the country is Amazon. And they were really the pioneers in all of this, you know?
Yeah, in a manner of speaking, yes, that's true.
Now, Montgomery Ward had just been a catalog company for decades until 1926. They opened up their first retail store in Plymouth, Indiana. It wasn't actually here in Chicago. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I actually donated because I was actually – although I was doing visual merchandising in the stores, I was also helping with the archives. I donated a photo to the Erie Cafe, which still sits on the wall there. It's actually a very large, like 4 foot wide, 3 feet high of the storefront, because the Erie Cafe was right behind the Montgomery mm-hmm. Ward building.
Sure.
And it was our cafeteria. We were there 2-3 days a week for lunch. So
we probably saw each other over
there. We probably
did. Didn't
yeah.
know it.
Yeah. So there's a picture on the east wall. Toward the back of the restaurant of the first Montgomery Ward. So a little something to look at next time you're there.
Yep. A lot of people don't realize also that the corporate headquarters 100 years ago was on Michigan Avenue, and it was one of the world's tallest buildings at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was.
Looked out over Grant Park, and of course Montgomery Ward was instrumental in keeping Grant Park open, you know, rather than it being developed.
Of course, instrumental in all of that. And the original building was on Michigan Avenue, across from Grant Park, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to say Madison and Michigan.
Exactly.
It's a block south of what is now the Cultural Center.
So
it would have been the library.
So he would watch the Grant Park being kind of developed, and that whole park area being developed outside of his window.
Mm-hmm. And watch Lollapalooza go up and everything
else.
Yeah,
Lollapalooza. and in 2004, Montgomery Ward, I don't know if you know this, came back. So is actually a website right now.
Oh,
that
it did.
Does exist. Oh, yeah. You can go to wards.com and buy all kinds of goods. Somebody bought the domain name and is running. I think it was actually the people who own Swiss Colony bought Montgomery Ward.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Do we have a little commercial? A little classic commercial? Let's listen.
It's supervised sale time at Ward's with huge savings throughout Ward's stores like Ward's Best Microwave Oven, now $100 off. Take your pick and save $6 on Ward's rugged 6 and 8 inch work boots. And save $60 or $130 on Ward's reliable refrigerators. This warm and comfortable sleeping bag is another super buy.
All right, there you go. Everything was also always on sale, of course. 1896, the first commercial installation of a telephone dial accompanied the first telephone. Hello, Dave, you want to get that, Dave? it was the installation of a 99-line automatic telephone exchange in LaPorte, Indiana in 1892. So it was the first commercial installation of a telephone dial. Because remember, you used to just lift up the phone.
Just like an Andy Griffith.
And just hit it.
Sarah, get me so-and-so.
Exactly. All right, I think Camille got that. All right, 1902, President Teddy Roosevelt became the first chief executive, U.S. chief executive, first president to ride in an automobile.
Hmm.
Yeah. He was the first.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Right? Horse mm-hmm. and buggy. 1902 seemed a little early to me, but I guess that's about right.
Well, yeah, that's a very early automobile,
yeah, right.
As they used to call them.
Yeah.
My grandfather and great-grandfather called them automobiles.
Did they really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's
well,
awesome.
that was the term. You know, Henry Ford first came out with one of the first horseless carriages, kind of an experimental thing.
That's what it was called first. It was a horseless carriage.
1898, 1899.
Yeah.
So, you know, TR was tooling around in D.C.
Absolutely.
A few years later in a horseless carriage.
That's right. 1919, just 17 years later, the Anti-Cigarette League of America was formed already in 1919 and right here in Chicago. So it was an advocacy group which had substantial success in the movement in the late 19th and early 20th centuries in passing anti-smoking legislation. The campaign sought to pass smoking bans in public places as well as ban cigarettes themselves.
Hmm.
All the way back then, 100 years ago.
Yeah. I'd heard something to that effect. I interviewed somebody from years ago now, the American Cancer Society, and they said they had been fighting tobacco for about 100 years. And I thought, really?
Yep.
And then they explained that. So there you go.
Quinn Ryan, the editor of Tribune's in-house publication, is assigned to WGN in 1924. His background included work as a student actor at Northwestern University, a column contributor for the Chicago Tribune, a cub reporter, a theatrical ghostwriter, and a freelance announcer. A true broadcasting pioneer.
Oh, he was. He must have been a remarkable man. I don't know if there were any air checks.
You never worked with him?
No, I never did. I never did. But he was the man, the point man, the go-to guy for things like the Scopes trial.
Right.
When they set up that
right.
in 1924. He did it all.
He did.
He did news, sports, music. You name it, he was on the air. It would have been really something to know somebody like that.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that's amazing, too, is that it was so new, you know, you were faced with the question, how do we do this?
Yeah.
We've never done this before.
He was the guy that figured it out.
Yeah, and people like that said, let's do it this way.
Yeah, let's figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it happen.
Amazing.
1958, the TV game show scandal investigation began. In 1956, the Jack Barry hosted game show. And I only know Jack Barry from The Joker's Wild, because this was way before my time. 21 featured a contestant, Herb Stemple, coached by producer Dan Enright, to allow his opponent to win the game. So this was obviously a rigged show. Charles Van Doren was another contestant on 21 who eventually came forth with stipulations about how he was persuaded to accept specific answers during his time on the show. And these elements, of course, were portrayed in the 1994 movie, The Quiz Show. Let's take a little listen.
Tonight here on 21, Herbert Stemple, our 29-year-old GI college student, can win $111,500, the highest amount of money ever to be won on television. But to do this, he's risking much of the money he has won thus far. So right now, let's meet our first two players as Geritol, America's number one tonic, presents 21.
I could use some
Geritol.
From
New York City, Mr. Charles Van Doren, and returning with $69,500 from Forest Hills, New York, Mr. Herbert Stemple.
So that was kind of the audio from that original show, which is crazy that stuff was happening at the time.
Yeah, and the quiz show movie was intriguing.
Yep.
I think they pretty much stayed
it.
Along the line there. And another thing that makes this interesting is that Charles Van Doren's father was a very known and respected professor of English literature, I think. Mark Van Doren taught at Columbia University. I think it was Columbia University. So, you know, there was a family reputation kind of at stake here, in addition to everything else that was going on with that quiz show.
1965, Rolling Stones released their single, I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
I have the original at home.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's cool. Their first number one U.S. hit. Of course, it was number one in the U.K. as well. 1969, CBS pits Merv Griffin against Johnny Carson in the late-night talk show arena. Carson, of course, wins, naturally. And here are one of my favorite Carson monologue jokes of all time.
But I wax nostalgic on Lincoln's birthday. Every Lincoln's birthday, I reminds me of my old girlfriend back in Nebraska, Gina Statutory. Name was Gina Statutory, and she went to Lincoln High, and she was voted Miss Lincoln because every guy in school took a shot at her in the balcony.
My favorite Carson joke of all time. And I remember, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I actually remember when that aired. That might have been the late 70s.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, and I was a kid. And I remember how great that was and how I had to write it down and tell my friends at school.
And the next day, doing your own stand-up.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, here's something groundbreaking. 1979, The Facts of Life premieres on NBC.
You take the good, you take the bad.
Uh-huh. All right, maybe not as groundbreaking as we thought. 1984, the last Volkswagen Rabbit was produced. Remember the Rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
Launched in 75 to improve lagging sales of the Beetle, because their Beetle, they kind of redesigned it and stuff, and it just wasn't very attractive. It's kind of like the Mustang. You look at the Mustang over the years. There were some years that car did not look great.
Oh, it just kind of looked kind of boxy.
Like a Taurus.
It didn't have a real sporty look to it.
No, it didn't. Do we have our Volkswagen? Oh, yeah, we do. Let's play our Volkswagen Rabbit commercial.
The incredible new Volkswagen Rabbit. Averages 38 miles per gallon down the highway.
Wow.
Goes from 0 to 50 in a snappy 8.2 seconds. Costs only $29.99.
That's a deal, man.
And it's
$29.99.
Then in 1998, Monica Lewinsky, it was a big Monica Lewinsky scandal. U.S. President Bill Clinton admits in taped testimony that he had an improper, I'm so tired.
Inappropriate.
I apologize. I didn't sleep enough tonight. So I, improper physical relationship with the White House intern. On that same day, he admitted before the nation that he misled the people about his relationship. It was the weirdest, like, two conversations. One was he was angry. Remember, he went on the air and he was angry.
Yeah.
I did not have any relations with that woman. I got to get back to the business of the American people. And it was, you know what I did? I apologize. I messed up. Of course I did. Oh, yeah. And it was multiple occasions. It's like, I think about that today because, I mean, in my business, I have interns that work for me. And you think about the example and you're trying to, help the student or help this person along in their career and teach them something, and they're kind of looking up to you, and you take advantage like that? What a piece of crap this guy is, right? Let's take a listen to the first admission.
This afternoon in this room, from this chair, I testified before the Office of Independent Counsel and the grand jury.
Nope, let's try the other one.
I answered their questions.
Hold on. We're going to play the first one first where he's pissed off. Let's take a listen.
Now, I have to go back to work on my State of the Union speech. And I worked on it till pretty late last night. But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
Yeah, and here he is. Oh, yeah. Woo! I'm sorry. You know what? Don't ever tell me that, and I know there's different strokes for different folks, and politically people lean left, they lean right. But every president has had those moments of ridiculous behavior. And that I marked down as one of them, especially for Bill Clinton. Now, here is later on when he says, I was wrong.
Good evening. This afternoon in this room, from this chair, I testified before the Office of Independent Counsel and the grand jury. I answered their questions truthfully, including questions about my private life, questions no American citizen would ever want to answer. Still, I must take complete responsibility for all my actions, both public and private. And that is why I am speaking to you tonight. As you know, in a deposition in January, I was asked questions about my relationship with Monica Lewinsky. While my answers were legally accurate, I did not volunteer information. Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong.
Oh, boy.
It constituted a critical lapse in judgment.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. But I love how that all comes out is, okay, you're right. I did have an appropriate relationship. I mean, how embarrassing.
I saw something about Monica Lewinsky earlier this week. Now I shouldn't have brought that up because I don't remember.
Well, do you know the dress is in the Clinton Library? I mean, so that's a piece of his history.
So, well, you can't get around the fact that the man was impeached now, not convicted, but impeached by the House and then went to trial in the Senate. So any, you know, presidential library or any, you know, commemoration of the man's term in office, you can't get around that.
You can name a scandal or two for every single president in the United States that has ever existed, pretty much. You can.
I don't think there was one for President Obama.
Oh, really? Okay. We'll check that off. All right, Walter Jacobson coming up next.